Morning, honorable members. My name is Bongile Skhosana, committee assistant.
Thank you.
Can
we get over the spokesperson?
My name is Musa Zondi, MLO Mineral Resources.
Good morning.
Mainly as an officer.
Mineral levies.
Media liaison officer, chair.
Okay. Good morning, my name is Miss Wamanga, I'm a public liaison officer.
Good morning, I'm Krizalos, I'm secretary to the work.
Good morning, I'm Lee Bobby, chief of secretary.
Good morning, I'm Lee Padilla, chief parliamentary liaison officer for Business Unity South Africa.
Good morning, I'm Sibongiseni Ngcobo, researcher for the committee.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Cathy Groshme. I'm from Mineral Resources, the PLO to the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you?
Oh. Good morning. I'm Sandile Nokina. I'm the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources in the Democratic Republic of South Africa.
Good morning, honorable members. Musa Mabuza, Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Mpumi Gavin, Office of the Director General, Department of Mineral Resources.
Honorable members, colleagues, good morning to you all. My name is Nketo Mkhize. I'm a unit manager in the committee section. Thank you.
Your sister?
Good morning. My name is Tseho Tulare. I'm a monitor.
Can you press that?
Good morning. My name is Tseho Tulare. I'm a monitor for the PNG Corp.
Good morning, I'm Madoda Sambata from the National Union of Mine Workers.
Thank you very much. Those are the people in attendance for now. Others will join us. We're told that some of the members are stuck in the traffic on their way here, but we will nevertheless start. We have one apology from Mr. Marais, who indicated that he's got a pre-arranged engagement. He will join us later. Are there any other apologies, Secretary?
There is only one apology from the Minister. She apologized that she won't be able to attend due to the fact that she is attending a cabinet. Thank you. Oh, sorry. And there are two other members, Ms. Mjobo and Mr. Dexter. They say they are still stuck in traffic. They are on their way.
Are they together?
We don't know.
You are saying, did
you? I was saying, Chatterson, the GM also would like to extend his apology for the same reason. And I think he made an indication. Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much. Any other apologies, honorable members? All right. In our agenda today, let me apologize for the committee session. She was overwhelmed, you know, with preparatory work for this meeting. Quite a number of documents that she had to produce. We normally would have an agenda for a day. We'll correct that in the next meeting. On the agenda, we would have the adoption of the program for the first term, and secondly, we would be looking at the annual report just to basically go through it, because those are things that we must just adopt, we've dealt with. And the third item on the agenda would be then the real discussion on the analysis of the State of the Nation address, where we will share views with the department. Those would be our agenda items for today, which will occupy us for the rest of the day. That's why I was worried about time, because it's quite a long agenda, looking at issues that that are involved. Now, in welcoming all of you in our first meeting in the parliamentary precincts, although this is not our first meeting, because in the first 2 weeks of our coming back, we have been in the study tour in the two countries, I would want to thank members of parliament that have given themselves time to basically be with us throughout the trip, both in Chile and in Bolivia, and the other part is that people who also formed part of our delegation were members of civil society, which we really appreciate, because when we discuss such a report, it will be enriched by all those that participated. For an example, we had trade unions in the form of National Union of Mine Workers, National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, represented by high-level, you know, representatives from those organizations. We also had an opportunity to also have representations from producers, to an extent that they have dispatched also their researchers to be with us during the trip, in the form of SAMDA. The president of SAMDA himself was part of the delegation, and he brought along a researcher from within that formation. And indeed, it was quite a memorable, you know, experience, which also did not go without challenges. We had a misfortunate situation where some of our members taken ill in Bolivia, and to an extent that two of our members of parliament were hospitalized. It was an unfortunate situation. It's a question of differences in terms of the atmosphere. You know, the different countries, they have a funny arrangement in terms of their mines. We mine underground, they mine in the mountains. You know, the altitude of more than 3,000 kilometers. So, which means that we were exposed to a different situation altogether. And it was worse in Bolivia, because the scarcity of oxygen, you know, the higher you go, the lesser oxygen you are able to get. And indeed, that's what it caused quite serious problems. But we'll discuss that when we discuss the report. Fortunately, no one was lost in that process. It was just, you know, sickness and people getting hospitalized otherwise. But what is important, which we want captured, and I'm happy that Mr. Kizer is here, is the role played by the travel agents. What you would expect from travel agencies is a full-scale service, where they will inform you of even climatic conditions, and they will inform you also about, you know, some you know, anomalies that you must expect in a particular country. In this instance, all what they did was to tell us about immunization for yellow fever. That was all. And they never ever raised other conditions that were likely to be faced with, so that we could prepare. For instance, we could have taken a decision not to go to Bolivia if you know, the whole thing was explained, would have chosen another country as opposed to Bolivia. So we must register that, that it was a very serious, you know, shortcoming on the part of the travel agency. I mean, it would have been worse if we had lost the life of one or two of our members in that course of the situation. You know, I'm raising it. Do you want to respond to that?
No, Chairperson, but 2 seconds.
Oh, okay. You wait?
I wanted to say something else.
Okay.
Relevant to that one.
All right. Let me give you a chance.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. That's one of the reasons I'm here. As a committee section, we would really love to apologize to honorable members for the environment that we all did not expect in Bolivia. I must say that when we organize international study tours or trips, we highly rely on DECO, which is the Department of Cooperative and International Relations, as well as our embassies, both in Bolivia and Chile. But unfortunately, we didn't have one in Bolivia. So all information that we did receive, under no circumstances indicated of the serious attitude challenges in Bolivia. And really, I'm a bit disappointed that the advice we get was not adequate. As you pointed out, Chairperson, you were correct by saying that they only alerted us to yellow fever. But in addition to that, I took a decision that members get immunization for all other sickness that were indicated by the private doctor, in order to try and ensure that members are safe. So we really apologize for that. And as a committee section, really will try and find out what really happened, why it was an oversight on their part, both embassies and the department, not to alert us to the attitude challenges in Bolivia. Thank you, Chairperson.
In fact, it should go beyond that. They must come here. Invite them when we discuss that report, both the travel agent and that department, because it happened to us, it may happen to others, who knows, in some instances there might be no survivors, like the situation you know, was likely to be in our own situation. You know, we had to incur extra costs by simply you know, rescuing people to go and house them in Brazil, which was not part of the plan.
Yes.
So it needs to go beyond that, so that they can realize the depth of this problem. So when we discuss that, we would ask you then to call them in, so that we can engage them and it's recorded, so that if it happens to another portfolio committee, then it's an issue that should be rectified. But fine, having said that, let's go straight to our agenda. Honorable members, before you have the draft first term program. You will see that we have already dealt with the general part of the program. And today we are expected to then adopt the annual report. We are expected to also analyze the impact of the State of the Nation address. And then we will handle, you know, the state-owned entities that are reporting to the department, starting with the State Diamond Trader and the Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator. That will be the 23rd of February. They have tabled, if you remember, their annual reports. All what we was outstanding from last year was for us to then engage with these entities, deal with those annual reports, so that then before the end of March, these reports must have been dispensed with. So indeed, that's why in this program we make sure that we put all of them for consideration. Mine Health and Safety will be on the 1st of March, Council. We would then, on the 4th of March, which is a Friday, you'll remember that we have an understanding that we will try as far as it is possible to avoid Fridays But from time to time, we're getting indication from parliamentary leadership that Fridays are working days. We're getting reminded left, right, and center. And I think we would have to, at some stage, follow those directions, directives from the parliamentary leadership. On the 4th, which is a Friday, we will then be receiving the first draft. That draft will encompass the report on the public hearings that were conducted on the establishment of state-owned mining company. We would also link that, which is related to the study tour, because the study tour was about us going out to Chile and Bolivia to learn experiences in terms of what is it that they have in the form of the state-owned mining company, how do they run them, and so forth, which I think you now have a wealth of that experience because you've been there, you've seen, and you've received reports. On the 8th, we will then be dealing with the Geosciences Council in Mintec, and then we will deal with the Petroleum Association of South Africa. You know, we have not yet received this annual report. I think committee section must follow this up so that we get their annual report, and because we have not been engaging, you know, with this state-owned entity. There was a bit of a confusion which was clarified by the department. At first, we thought everything to do with energy and petroleum, we have nothing to do with it, until the DG in one meeting, if you remember, clarified the situation and pointed us correctly to this entity. So we would then be engaging them. Then on public hearings, this section is likely to change, honorable members. You would remember that at some stage we've indicated to you that we have exhausted our budget. In fact, going to the study tour, we had a budget overrun of about 250,000. But then, fortunately for us, it was condoned by the chair of chairs and the committee section, which meant that when we got back, we had no money. Now, we did go back to the parliamentary leadership because our view has been that these public hearings must be conducted in areas where mining is taking place, so that we can allow space for mining communities, for mine workers, for other interested parties to listen directly from the producers as well as other role players, you know, giving us their own views about transformation in the industry in the form of the investigation that was conducted by the Department of Mineral Resources. There is a report in terms of the assessment they've made. They've also went to an extent of making amendments to the mining charter so that we can then, in that total package, listen to what is the take of individual companies, what is the take of the labor, of organized labor, and what is the take of communities, all in as far as that is concerned. Now, I'm saying these dates are going to change because with our situation where we don't have money, we did get an approval that we can undertake this trip, but then the approval has got a condition that instead of undertaking it during that period that we are suggesting, let's push it to the end of the month. Now, what will therefore happen is we would maybe shift the 23rd to the 16th, so that we have the first leg of the public hearings here in Parliament, and then the two remaining legs at the end of the month, we will go to Gauteng in an area called Carltonville. Already we are working with the stakeholders there to find us a suitable venue, and also when we do our advertisement, we will then, you know, solicit, you know, the participation of mining communities, of other relevant stakeholders there. Then the second one will be conducted in Northwest province in a place called Klerksdorp. There again, we are dealing with the stakeholders to get us a right venue and also to get people participating. So there's a likely change in that program as you see it, as it stands, given that conditional approval by the relevant authorities. Then we'll consider the annual reports of all the state-owned entities and adopt them. That will be our last. We will then bring this forward as a result of the changes in terms of the public hearings. So unfortunately, we got informed of this yesterday. So we didn't do some work in terms of exact dates that we need to be looking at. But then what I'm indicating to you is that instead of public hearings being in the middle of the month, they will be moved towards the end of the month. Whatever would have happened at the end of the month is going to be moved back to the middle of the month. So, but issues themselves are not going to change. What will change is only timing as a result of this conditional approval, which we really appreciate because, strictly speaking, we have no money. We are one portfolio committee that we can complain that the budget was a bit low, and it's now proven that we've used it, exhausted it. You know, we are now beyond what was allowed. Hoping that when the distribution of funds is done in the course of the March, we will then receive more allocation, because we would interface with communities. I mean, that's the nature of our work. We are told that we must be activist parliament, and that's what exactly we would be. We would go out there and conduct our work in the full care of, the citizenry. Honourable members, that's the draft first term program. Your views? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the other document, the annual reports of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, then it says Department of Entities reporting to the committee on the second page. It's a page printed in landscape format document. Is the issue of the following entities account directly to the Portfolio Committee. Why I'm raising it is I see a parcel noted down, and there's a question mark after Petroleum Agency of South Africa on the second page, three question marks, and the Mining Qualifications Authority, MQA. And I think the Director General is here able to say, should we add the MQA or is PASA reporting to the Minerals Portfolio Committee indeed correct? Thank you.
Would you want for you to react to that, TG?
Yes, sir. MQA, in terms of the current statute, the Mine Health and Safety Act, reports to DMR. But we know that the rationalization process that took place in relation to all sitters in government is going to impact upon that. But at the moment, the situation still as is in terms of the law. Until the law has been amended, we can then begin to say that MQA is no longer answerable to us. PASA also is an instrument of delivery envisaged in the MPRDA, and which is being administered by DMR. That being the case, therefore, it means that it resorts under DMR.
What is the suggestion, Mr. Honorable Morel, Honorable Schmidt?
I think we have the key answer on the one entity being PASA. I've got no problem there. And the MQA reports to the Department of Labor. Okay, all right. But then it's fine.
Honorable, This doesn't mean that, though, we will not invite MQA in terms of what we discussed. If you remember, those question marks arise from our strategic planning meeting, where we looked at these entities, but then we were not sure. Now we're sure about PASA. That's why it's in the program. And MQA, I think, would also fit them in and invite them, because they are dealing with an important area of work in the industry, that of producing requisite skills. So we would invite them to come and appraise us of their programs and strategic plans. Any other comment, all honourable members? Honourable Sonto?
Chair, just to say the program outline is not inviting a lot of questions so far. Understanding that it's not as rigid as it is put on paper, where there are changes that need to be effected in the course of time, those changes are going to be effected. Thank you.
Things that is moving that you must adopt.
Definitely, I would want, but just one clarity, Chairperson. The experience, the Bolivian experience, prompts me to ask this question: are we visiting Israel?
Not at the moment. We will discuss the study tour and identify countries to visit. Don't you want to visit?
One would not want to move from dangers of altitude to dangers of bombs.
Okay. All right, members, do I get somebody seconding the move for the adoption of this program? Honorable Hululu. Any objections? Go on. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our second item, which is the consideration and the adoption of the annual report. This report, as you would see, that it's quite a thick document, but fortunately for us, it's a document that deals with work that we have done. Apart from re-raising our missions, objectives that we have discussed in our strategic plans, we also are reporting on actual work done. These are the meetings that were held in the period under review. We've held 32 meetings, and meetings that were cancelled were only 3 meetings. Now, if you look at the report, the very first page, it gives you the dates of the meetings, it gives you the agenda, and it gives you a summary of what we resolved on. I would take it that honorable members did read through. If there are any corrections, let us do those corrections. If you look at the third meeting, which was in February, under the resolutions, it says the committee considered all 5 annual reports and adopted 3 with a view to call the state diamond trader and the South African Diamonds and Precious Metals Regulator for follow-up discussions. Indeed, that's what had happened. And there were meetings that followed that, but eventually the matter will be dealt with under the annual report of these 2 entities. when we deal with those annual reports, issues that were outstanding are going to be interrogated through there. You would recall that there was a request from the department that the matter is receiving attention directly from the ministry. And we heard that the deputy minister was charged with the responsibility to basically look at the state of affairs in the state diamond trade and the precious metals. The new, the reorganized or organization of these two entities, we don't know yet. They said to us that that will be reflected in the annual reports. Particularly the problem was around the funding model of the state diamond trader, and the regulator also raising some challenges, which some of them were raised by the Auditor General. They did give us a list of their actions that they've taken arising out of the Auditor General's report. So that is still an issue that we must still handle. But either than that, the rest of the report is reflective of what happened. And as I said, I hope that you did read it, because after having adopted it now, it will go to the ATC as the annual report of the committee. Over to you, honourable members.
Schmidt, the only thing I'd like to raise, maybe as a taking it forward, is, for instance, if you look at page 7 of that report, it says, briefing by the Department of Mineral Resources, LIMDEF, and Civil Society and Developments in ArcelorMittal Mine. I get the impression that sometimes we deal with a matter, and at the end of that hearing, we kind of move on and forget about it evermore. So there appears to be some lack in follow-up with regards to, in particular, this matter. I mean, there might be other matters as well, but we don't know what happened to LIMDEF and the appearance and the eventual decision by the department, by Limpopo province, or this LIMDEF institution. So, you know, it's good to raise matters to discuss it, but somewhere along the line, we need to have a system where we can say we want some form of feedback by 30 days or a month or 60 days or whatever, but at least round off the matter so that you know, we're having raised the matter, where it eventually led you. Otherwise, it's senseless raising the matter and then leaving it in the mid-air, and we don't know what the final conclusion of that matter was, in particular with reference to that page 7 and 8.
Honorable Schmidt, maybe let's refresh our memories on these two issues raised there. One is that the conclusion of the LIMDEF issue was that the department told us in very clear terms that there could be no changes effected in the ownership patterns in LIMDEF until there is a ministerial request and thereafter a ministerial approval. So LIMDEF was told by the department in our presence that status quo should and must remain until they have received a ministerial approval. So we left it at that angle, because they also indicated that with the developments, they don't see their way through in seeking a ministerial approval. But that doesn't mean that the department cannot update us maybe in the next meeting in terms of whether eventually there was that ministerial approval. Because to us, that was a safeguard, that no changes would be effected until such time that there is a ministerial approval as required by law. On the issue of Daung, if you would recall, you have taken a decision as the portfolio committee and given it to the office of the chairperson. And our report back here was that the matter has received that attention and it's been handled and it is resolved. And as we speak now, the issue has received serious attention at the highest level in the department and resolved. Now, those are the issues that we took it that they were removed from the agenda of the portfolio committee because of those decisions. But indeed, you are right. Sometimes we need some updates that
this is the status quo in terms of an issue that we have handled. But just for your benefit on these two issues, those were the clear decisions that we have taken. Maybe the resolution part has not fleshed that out quite clearly so that one can see. But I think we will correct it in the final document that we will sign. Honorable Soto.
Chair, I was about to come to that. I understand Honorable Schmidt to be saying that if you look at page 3, for an example, column number 2, the committee considered the program and agreed to adopt the program after the strategic plan briefing by the department. Now, there's no indication whether the department, after we had adopted the minutes, came to us and gave us that particular strategic plan briefing that we're talking about there. To me, it seems as if we are short of a column there that would explain the status of the resolution as we adopted the minutes. I understand him to be saying that. But with what you are saying, that a final version would take care of that, I'm appeased.
Yeah, thank you very much. But if you look at the following page, page 4, item number 5, it talks to the department briefing us on their 5-year strategic plan immediately after those meetings. Did you see that? Just also as a further point to basically, yeah. Okay. Any other comments, honorable members? Honorable Schmidt?
I think what Mr. Saunders is saying, that if we did take a decision, and we postponed the decision on the adoption of the 5-year program. It was postponed to after the discussion on the strategic plan. But it doesn't indicate there that it was then finally adopted. I suppose one can read into it that it was adopted. But it either creates the impression that there was no follow-up on that issue, or that it was in fact part of the strategic plan which was then adopted, if you understand what I'm saying. In other words, it needs to be tied down either by a formal follow-up meeting, or by virtue of stating in this document that relating to point 2, the 5-year program was adopted, or whatever the fact is. It needs to be dealt with finally in the paper at least.
I think the point is taken. We will reflect. We were working on that 5-year program as we speak. All our plans revolve around the portfolio committee's 5-year program. But I think we will have to check in some of the minutes where we finally, you know, took a decision to adopt it. You know, your point is taken. Honorable Khululu.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't know if I was a bit lost actually initially, but I think I'm beginning to catch up now. In fact, what you are saying, Chair, and the two honorable members here, is that on that column, the resolution remarks, what we are saying basically is that when the committee, for instance, requests the department to deal with issues, for instance, as a committee, you are saying that we need to put time frames, that we would expect that the response of that request by when. Is that what you are saying?
It's along those lines. It's along those lines. Yes. I hope that clarifies you now. Are you now on board? Okay. Any other comments, honourable members? All right. Are you sure that you have read this document? Why do I have the sense that when did you circulate it?
be lenient to you. Let's deal with the other item. Because if you adopt this, it means you have agreed to it. And I don't want to rush you to it. And funan bambing goes. Because some of the questions you're asking are answered in the following page. So let me be lenient and let's suspend the process in this item, and we deal with the next item after completing the next item. During tea break, you would have to read faster, and then be happy that this is the document that you will adopt. How is that for progress?
Well, I think it's the most progressive proposal I've ever heard in this.
Thank you very much. Let's suspend the proceedings on this and go to the next item. What time is the tea break? 11. Yeah, we'll then come back after tea break to this annual report. Our next item would be the impact of the State of the Nation's address on us as the ministry, department, and the portfolio committee. We would like, honorable members, I don't know if you would want to see a different approach, that we give the department a space to give us what is their take, and then we come in on areas that we believe are not reflected upon by the department, which arise out of the State of the Nation address, and engage broadly. So here it's a process which is inclusive. We will listen to the department, but also as this portfolio committee will have to reflect on some of the issues raised by the state president. Over to you, TG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Happy New Year. I'm very happy that Honorable Chairperson, you have given me the floor just after you have set up a very, very, very progressive precedent, the precedence of leniency, which we have extended to the members of the committee. And I hope that the Honorable Members will extend the same leniency to us also, in the spirit of what the Chairperson has already initiated. I love the spirit that is prevailing in the House. Thank you very much for that, Chairperson. Coming to the issue of the State of the Nation address, the Honorable Members will appreciate the fact that the State of the Nation was only delivered only on Thursday last week. And therefore, we have not had an in-depth analysis of the impact of the State of the Nation address on our programs. So the work that we have done right now is we have only lifted only those issues that within the available time we could then be able to discern. And the Honorable Members will notice that insofar as those issues are concerned, there are those issues that are cross-cutting right across the government, like job creation. Now, what we'll be doing here, we'll be attempting to indicate how that is going to be affected in our programmatic work in the department. There are specific issues that relate specifically to the line responsibility of our department. We'll also indicate there as to what it is that we are doing. And I take it, therefore, Honorable Chairperson, that this is indeed work in progress. We will engage with the committee on our take, as you have correctly pointed out, as to what the impact of the State of the Nation address is going to be on our program. You will also indicate what are the areas that you think that we should have missed, and therefore which we should also include in our address. The Honorable Members perhaps will be a little bit irritated by the fact that I will make a reference to a process that they are all aware of needed, the needed process. Because if you see at the, if you look at the presentation, we have started from the back, started from what we are doing into the department, and then we'll then link that up now to the State of the Nation address. So I just thought that I must just explain that. Oh, and before that, Mr. Mbeki has indicated to us that we must amend. I forgot to say that. That the presentation to PC on mineral resources, that the committee now is mineral resources. So that change is effected on the screen, but I'm sure it's not effected on the document that you read with you. I don't want you to say that I'm misleading you. I have a different document than the one that you have. It's the same document, Honorable Member. So basically, this is just a reminder, a reminder of the historical process that has given birth to a growth strategy. One element of which is job creation, which is basically needed. I won't talk about the first, because NITED adopted this two-pronged approach. I won't talk about the first approach, which basically was a short-term approach to save jobs during the global economic meltdown. I'll talk about the long-term approach, whereby the industry decided to position the mining industry in South Africa so that it's in a favorable position so that it can take advantage of the boom when the boom happens. So this first slide talks to that, just a reminder to the honorable members. But the main thing now is on the next slide. In June 2010, the stakeholders signed this declaration on the strategy for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation of South Africa's mining industry. It is this strategy that is the repository of the program for job creation, not only for growth, and for job creation in South Africa. So the mining industry anticipated perhaps the call that was made by the state president on Thursday, because already by June, they had already embarked on a process that would deal with the issue of job creation in the mining industry. Because remember, we're dealing with saving jobs. And then we thought that our mandate, the mandate of the stakeholder forum, must not only end with job saving. We must also move over to a new process of job creation, which then talked to and responded to the call that was made by the president. Sector strategy recognizes inherent mineral wealth in South Africa with an exploitative life of more than 100 years. And you'll recall that's exactly what the state president said on Thursday. The strategy further recognizes the lost opportunity during the immediate past and longest synchronized commodities boom, with RSA mining sector contracting by 1% relative to a 5% average growth rate experienced by its peer jurisdictions. As to what actuated that is something also that is contained in the strategy. That's why we talk about the evaluation of the binding constraints to growth of the sector, and the strategy therefore proposes solutions that will position the country's mining sector along a sustainable growth strategy in recognition of the cyclicity of the economy. We in as much as in the past, there has been no agreement as to what these binding constraints are. Some people, it depends who you are and where you sit. Some people would say it's the regulatory environment. Some people would be saying that it's productivity. Some people would be saying it's the geographical location of South Africa relative to the market and all those things. But with all the mining industry stakeholders coming together, or others would talk about infrastructure, but with all these mining stakeholders coming together, we then came up with a menu of what we considered to be binding constraints, which encapsulated all the issues that have been raised in the past. And then the strategy now is devising modalities to remove those binding constraints. The strategy is imbued with elements of job creation, competitiveness, and sustainable development, and further emphasizes the mutually reinforcing nature of competitive growth and transformation of the sector. The strategy is currently being considered by the ministerial cluster on economic sectors and employment. As you will recall, that this strategy was signed upon by the stakeholders, with government being part and parcel of those stakeholders. Now, we are now engaged in a process of taking that strategy and to cabinet so that it becomes a government strategy, a government document. And that is the process that is currently underway. It was supposed to have been discussed tomorrow at the economic cluster, with a view to taking it to cabinet. Here we're just in the next slide. We're just indicating what the president said about the new growth path and job creation, and how our strategy fits into all that, into the new growth path and the new and the State of the Nation address. Bear in mind that this strategy preceded both the growth path and the State of the Nation address, but we believe that the contents thereof talk to both the growth path as well as the State of the Nation address. So what did we then do as the stakeholders? Immediately, just before the State of the Nation address, what date was it? Recently, on the 31st of January, in anticipation of this call that would be made by the President during the State of the Nation address, we made that committee of principals convened, where basically we were talking about the leaders of all these sectors, the leadership of the Chamber of Mines, the leadership of the labor movement as a whole, the leadership of SAMDA, and the leadership in government. We came together and said, our strategy talks about job creation. We know that this is what is going to happen when the president addresses the nation on the 10th of February. What is it, therefore, that we should do as the sector through the instrumentality of MIDET to begin to identify from the strategy job opportunities that will then be created in this process? And we therefore set a task team that is now going to do an analysis of the study with a view to identifying job opportunities that will be created in the mining industry, both in the short term and in the long term. So we are in the process of doing that. We haven't waited for the cabinet process to be complete. We are moving ahead with MIGDET because what is contained in the strategy also constitutes part and parcel of the mandate of MIGDET. And therefore, to that extent, we are not constrained to go ahead in terms of the MIGDET process. So that task team now will determine the growth potential espoused by the sector strategy and determine the actual employment absorptive capacity of the sector. The outcome of the job creation potential will be released in March, which is basically only in few weeks to come from now. That is as far as job creation is concerned. And in the fullness of time, honorable members, that is after March. We hope that by then the cabinet will have approved the strategy, and the task team will have concrete information as to where are the jobs going to be created in the mining industry and how many jobs are likely to be created in the mining industry. And it is at that stage that we'll come back to the honorable members and apprise the honorable members of the outcomes of the work of the task team in this regard, so that this honorable committee can begin to monitor us and exercise oversight over our work on the basis of what we have said to you is a potential for job creation in the mining industry. And I must say, Honorable Chairperson, I don't think that in the history of the mining industry, they have been so cooperative in working together with the state in order to find solutions to problems besetting the mining industry. I think we now know that we are all responsible leaders of this sector, and that being the case, therefore, it is important that we have to work together, because if the mining industry gets negatively affected, it impacts upon all of us as stakeholders. And I think that also has to be appreciated, because this strategy was born out of that spirit that is currently prevailing within the stakeholders in the mining industry. When I'm talking about the mining industry, honorable members, I'm talking about the employers and the employees. I'm not only talking about the cooperation only between the government and the employers and the employees, as well as SAMDA. Now, moving to the state-owned mining company, that's another issue that the president raised during his State of the Nation address. That's what he said. I've taken that quotation there. So, now, the honorable members will recall that in December this year, we approached a cabinet in order for cabinet to approve that AEMFC becomes the nucleus, gets recognized as the nucleus upon which the creation of a state-owned mining company will pivot in the future. This AEMFC is currently a subsidiary of Central Energy Fund, which resides under the Department of Energy. So the cabinet then approved that indeed AEMFC will be the nucleus for the establishment of this state-owned mining company. And they further enjoined the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy to work together to find modalities for hiving off this AEMFC from SEF so that it becomes a stand-alone company. We are working together in an interdepartmental task team with the Department of Energy as well as SEF in order for us to do that. We will very soon go back to cabinet with a proposal as to what are the modalities that will be employed in hiving off this AEMFC, which is a subsidiary of SEF, to be a standalone company that will then constitute that nucleus for the state-owned mining company. And honorable members will notice that in the interim, this company continues to operate as a going concern with the launch of its first mine scheduled within a month from now. Some of the prospecting rights that were acquired by this company on certain strategic minerals will have now graduated into mining rights and will further graduate now into a mining operation, which I think is a good thing for the country in the context of the fact that we really want to create jobs in the South African mining economy. That's as far as the SOMCO, the state-owned mining company, is concerned. The third issue that the president mentioned was the beneficiation of our mineral resources, local beneficiation of our mineral resources, so that we can begin to diversify the South African mining industry. The mining industry and minerals in particular, being,
wasting commodities. It becomes important then that we have to begin to secure the viability of the mining industry going into the future by ensuring that we diversify it. We don't only rely on the extraction of South Africa's minerals, but we also talk to the value addition for those on those minerals, so that they can create jobs for the South African economy. I don't want to bore the honourable members with the history of this issue of beneficiation in the South African mining industry as an element or component of a debate. This has been going on for a very, very long time. And we trace this thing back to 1994, when the debate all started. There it is. So it started in 1994. We all recognize that there is a need for this, but the problem all along has been that, you know, there was no agreement as to whether this is the correct solution for South Africa's economy. But right now, the strategy has now finally been finalized. There has been a very protracted consultative process, which has resulted in the actual formulation of this strategy. This strategy also, together with this growth strategy, were the two documents that we had submitted for the cabinet committee that was supposed to sit on the 17th of this month. So this document is also being discussed in cabinet, and once the cabinet has expressed a view on it, because we wouldn't like to give the honourable members the elements of a document which may end up not being adopted by cabinet, and then at a later stage you call up and say, you told us this is what you are going to do, and now this is something else now that has been adopted here. You so misled us. Mm-hmm. So I would appeal to the honourable members to allow us to just leave it there by saying that there is a strategy that has been adopted. We have submitted the document to cabinet committee, so that it, because it normally goes to the cabinet committee first, and then it goes to cabinet, and then it gets approved. It becomes a government document, and at that stage we come back to the honourable members and begin to unpack the strategy for the honourable members, and even indicate to the honourable members what is our implementation plan, so that that can be your tool for oversight on this particular program. The last issue which we thought also that is cross-cutting that the president made mention of are vacancies, government vacancies. Vacancies in government departments, etc., etc. We have done also an analysis of our vacancies, and we have set ourselves the target of the end of June as the date on which we'll be having all the current vacancies in the department filled. So the if you look on the left-hand side, you'll be seeing the status of what is happening. On the right-hand side, you are seeing the plan as to how are we planning to deal with that, going up to the end of June. But I think what is important, the figures that are very critical for the department, is the vacancy rate in the department. What is the current vacancy rate in the department? The honourable members, I know that they have been sitting on my neck for the last 13 years on this issue of vacancy rate in the department. But I must say that we have made progress, because as we speak today, we are sitting at 16% vacancy rate in the department, and that is the situation that we want to reverse to zero by the end of June. Thank you very much,
Thank you very much,
DG. There you are, honourable members. I think we are given an overview. Let's engage with the presentation and then come back to general debate around the State of the Nation address. I see your head, Honourable Khululu. Honourable Schmidt.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank the DG for this outline from the department about the state-owned name of the nation address. In fact, I must say that we appreciated the committee that needed has been established, which will be working on the outcome of the job creation potential, which will be released somewhere in March. We really appreciate that. I see that some work has been done, for instance, on the question of vacancies, which is about 16%, and which I must say, those vacancies, most of them, they are within the mine health and safety. I just wanted to come up with a short story, actually. I was trying to assist, actually, this division within DMR. Not very long ago, I was called by a student who has studied mine health and safety, but she's doing some other work. She's very, very interested in joining the Department of DMR, seeing that there's so many accidents within the mines, and she's still young. She's very, very much prepared to come and contribute her experiences. In fact, she's enrolled with the university somewhere in Joburg. So I think you need to, we're helping you as members of parliament, because we interact with our constituencies. So that I think I would love to see that student joining your what you call. Yeah, because you really have to fill in those positions so that the what you call the president's what you call is realized. And I must mention, honourable members and chairperson, that I would expect, for instance, on those outcomes from MITED to try and come up with those strategies should also involve the private sector, as the president alluded to that fact, that as a department alone you can't regenerate jobs. You have to somehow involve the private sector. I think you'd also need to focus on the skills development. You need to work with the universities, you need to work with schools, colleges, and all those, so that you train those students. There are so many of them, particularly in the mining towns. Like, for instance, where I come from, there's so many students, you know, who are interested in mining. And if you could really look into skills development, I think you'll go a very, very long way. Taking some of the what you call contributions by my what you call here. And of course, the question of alluded to
concentrate on what you want to say.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then now, coming on to the question of the establishment of the state-owned mining company, it's very, very interesting, as I was saying yesterday, Honorable Chairperson, that there is already that company in existence. And really would the committee would love to know who are those directors. I think it would be very, very important for us to know who is going to be driving that vehicle, because really would want to know who are they and
Smitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue which I'd like to ask about is what the status of the strategy will ultimately be. Will it be regulations? Will it be enacted? Will it be policy guideline? That's one thing. Then everything has an impact on anything else. I mean, whatever you do here has a ripple effect. And I'm personally in favor of beneficiation because that's the best way of adding value to your mineral resources without it being exported. And if it's exported, there's value addition to it. But the are we looking at best international practices? Because, and you know, I'm not saying it's the best way to do it in terms of best international practice, but at least determine that what the impact was of similar steps in other countries, did it have a positive effect on the economy, on the exports? All those things I think need to be incorporated. And then, of course, my point of view has always been that beneficiation is not the task, or solely, let's call that, solely the task of the mining industry. Miners can't make jewelry. I mean, it's as simple as that. So can jewelers. Jewelers not mine. I mean, they're not interested in that sector. They don't want to. They don't have the skills. And they make very poor jewelry. So, you know, we need to determine which sector is the additional sector to be created. So it's not just saying mining, you're responsible for making jewelry. I mean, it won't happen. It can't happen. It doesn't have the skills. So what's the kind of thinking along those lines, or is it a bit too early days?
Thank you very much. Would you want to add to those pieces of one?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, insofar as the mine health and safety, that's one of the areas where we really need capacity, because we've got a big challenge there in terms of retaining and attracting skills into that particular area of expertise, because it's a skills intensive, it's a knowledge intensive kind of an area. We would therefore appreciate to receive the application of that lady, and we will then consider it, and we would like, you know, the people to bring these people to us wherever they find them, because we have a problem when we advertise of getting these people. And of course, when they get in, we need to first expose them to the work of the department. We've got an internship program in the department. We can bring them as interns first and then take them up into and absorb them into the department. The private sector participation in this, I agree with the Honorable Khululu. And it was for that reason, right from the beginning, that we thought that a MIG must not be a government process, but it must be an industry process. A process that is driven by all the stakeholders in the industry, including workers, the mine owners, the government, junior mining companies, all the significant stakeholders in the mining industry had to be involved in this process, precisely because we are aware right from the beginning that ours as the government is to facilitate the environment within which jobs can be created. Ours is to facilitate the environment within which growth can take effect, but we don't grow the economy, nor do we, as the government, do we create jobs. It is the private sector. So this partnership that is already in existence, which manifested itself in the signing of this declaration on the 10th of June, we think that it augurs well in bringing in the mining sector, who will be the creators of jobs, and the workers, by the way, who are the actual creators of wealth. You see, they are also participating in the process. So already we have already done that. Skills development, it's only that it's a pity that we didn't unpack the strategy for you, because if we had unpacked the strategy for you,
you would have seen that skills development is one of the elements of the strategy, is one of the key elements of the strategy, because make no mistake, we are losing our expertise to other jurisdictions. So we must then begin now to begin to develop skills in South Africa that we can then be able to retain. So it's part and parcel of this. And the depth of skills was one of the binding constraints that we identified in the strategy itself. So it's one of the areas that we are also dealing with in the strategy. Who are the directors of SOMCO, of this African Exploration and Mining and Finance Corporation? It's a subsidiary of SEF. Therefore, SEF appoints board members. The chairperson of this company, as we speak, is the CEO of, is the group CEO of SEF, Mr. Mputu Midamani. And the CEO of the company is one Sizwe Madondo, who's the CEO of this company. But as to whether going into the future, when this company devolves into SOMCO, those people will still be in position, it's something that will be informed by the business case of the state-owned mining company, the end state of the state-owned mining company. Honorable Schmidt, I know your questions. You're always having difficult questions. The status of the strategy. You mean the growth strategy or the beneficiation strategy? The beneficiation strategy. Actually, let me just talk about both strategies, because I think it's going to be very significant for us to understand what will be the status of both strategies going into the future. Are we anticipating any change in policy as it currently stands? Are we anticipating any change in the contents of the law as it currently stands? Starting with the growth strategy, definitely yes. The answer is yes, because the amendments that we're currently dealing with in the department are informed by that process. Because when we talk about binding constraints, regulatory environment was seen as one of those binding constraints. And if therefore it is identified as a binding constraint, it goes without saying that there will be a need for us to revisit the contents of the law as it currently stands, so that it ceases to be a binding constraint. It becomes a facilitator for growth and a facilitator for job creation. So insofar as the law is concerned, as a result of the strategy, there will be a change in the law. And also, as a result of the beneficiation strategy, there will also be some changes in the contents of the law and in the contents of the policy in order to facilitate this beneficiation. But those changes are not going to be fundamental, because the bulk of the strategy will be that, a strategy, which will basically be a guideline, which will, some of the contents of the strategy will migrate into regulations, some of the contents of the strategy will migrate into guidelines, the departmental guidelines, and some of the contents of the strategy will migrate into the actual practices that inform the conduct of the official in the department. So it's a multi-pronged kind of a result, which may result in changes in policy, in changes in legislation, in changing in regulation, and in changing in practice, in administrative practices in the department. So as to which ones will migrate into law, into policy, into whatever, that will begin to manifest itself as we bring the legislation and the policy to the committee. Are we looking at the best international practice? Yes, we are looking at the best international practice. But as we are doing that, we are also alive to the notion that the South African situation has got a specificity of its own. is a specific kind of an environment. We've therefore should inform what we believe to be the actual content of the strategy going into the future. We have looked at a number of jurisdictions, and when we begin to unpack the strategy to the committee, you will then begin to see our comparative analysis as to what did we take from where, what did we look somewhere, and what position did it inform in the current contents of the strategy that we are proposing. We've done a wide research on this, and what assisted us is the protractedness of this process, because it kept on changing several times. It started being a policy at some stage, and at some stage there was a talk of legislation that we need to legislate this, you know, but ultimately now we have had this soft landing, which is basically a strategy that will inform this. We agree also, we have taken note of the fact that the miners are not beneficiaries, and it would be wrong for us to force the South African producers to be manufacturers. It cannot be. That's why people have selected to go and dig rather than to go and manufacture. So we cannot force that. But what we want to happen is that as the producers produce, as they enter into export arrangements, as they enter into sales agreements with their clients internationally and all over, they must take into consideration the fact that there is a need for the raw materials to be made available to the local beneficiaries. They must take into consideration that. As to what it is that they have to do, we are not going to prescribe to them. It must be their business decision. But all what we would expect them to do is for them to be conscious of the fact that there is a need for us to make the raw materials available. So that's what we expect of them. But if some producers feel that, you know, they have it, they have all what it takes to be a manufacturer, and they would like to be a manufacturer, we won't stop them. But all what we want to do is to ensure that at the end of the day, there is a beehive of activity in terms of beneficiation in South Africa, so that we obviate this practice of our natural resources being exported to other jurisdictions and create jobs there. And then we then have to import those natural resources as finished products at exorbitant prices. So those are the mischiefs that we seek to address by doing this. We are not going to force producers to be manufacturers. Advocate Schmidt. Yeah, I think that's.
Thank you very much. Any other take, Honourable Sondo? Can I see an indication of other hands that want to speak on this matter? No. All right.
Chairperson, what makes me happy about the state of the nation's address is that the efforts employed by this committee taking the direction of SOMCO was not in vain. I think I must say that we are vindicated, because really there were some doubts, rhetorics of nationalization and all that, which was scaring the DA and all the other people. The committee decided to take this route, and it is the route that seems to be seeing the light of. I was. You will have to agree with me. I think, DG, you have taken you and this man next to me, you have taken the contribution that I was about to make, because if you look at 1998, there was policy talking about how should South African communities benefit from the mineral resources of our country. That was in 1998. Now we are still talking about this year. Many years after that, we are still about finalizing now the real thing that will make people benefit really, really now. You know, one is therefore, whilst we applaud that direction of it having graduated from a policy into a strategy, as you have said, really, we need to be upping the pace, because as we are taking this snail pace that we are moving with, looters are looting these mineral resources, and they are doing it quicker than we think. I also wanted to emphasize on the skills development teaching, because creating jobs without skilling that mining fraternity, you are just creating jobs that you might not sustain. So if skills development becomes one of the key drivers in dealing with the with these priorities, then it becomes something that we could retain. I was looking at another point that I've marked here. And this state-owned mining company, DG, I think as the committee, after our study tour, and I'm sure stakeholders around mining, we are clear now about how it should be. All it needs are the brains now to put the concepts together so that it can be modeled to what it should be. Otherwise, really, other countries that have started it earlier on, they are reaping the fruits, whilst we are still thinking about reaping the fruits. Lastly, Chairperson, the bone letter. I'm sure it means the letter, the bone letter. No, it doesn't matter. But I'm just happy. I'm just happy that the committee, all our efforts were not in vain in terms of taking the route that we've taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see Honorable Schmidt wants to agree more with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the state-owned mining company, Mr. Chair, you know, I'm more than aware of the fact that there are other state-owned companies, I mean, entities. You have Eskom, you have SAA, you have Transnet, you have Arms Corps, you have many others. I mean, I can't recall them all now. But and all I'm saying is my concern arises from the following. Many of these state-owned entities operate within what they call economic a natural monopoly. In other words, Transnet operates within the sector that no other company would like to get involved in railway, because it's so expensive, and if you start competing, it doesn't become cost effective. Same with SAA, I think Eskom the same. All those kind of operate in a natural monopoly. Sasol might be the exception, but Sasol, as I understand, developed out of a particular technique, out of a development of being able to manufacture fuel from coal, and then CESL was established. So they didn't say, CESL, let's compete with other similar fuel companies. It was a particular development which necessitated a state-owned company, which then became a private-owned company, and it's a very successful company based on the technology, not in a common practice. What we are doing now with a state-owned entity, mining company, is we are imposing or having a state-owned mining company partake in a competitive environment, a very highly competitive environment. In fact, a cutthroat business is probably the better way to describe it. And if you're, and that's how I understand the business. I've never been a miner in practice. if you're not there to make profit, being in the business to ensure that your stakeholders derive benefit, you're not going to make it as an entity, except some of the exceptions might be the extremely high prices. But it's been the exception to the rule, and some people are saying it's a super cycle. But even a super cycle runs out of energy after a while, and then you have natural prices, and then competitiveness kicks in, and then you have losses, and someone is going to carry those losses. I mean, ultimately the shareholder carries those losses if you're not making profit. So, and they, within that, there's a national, and I'm not saying it because nationalization is the other issue. I mean, that's a totally separate issue. But if you see nationalization, it runs in cycles. When profits are high, governments tend to nationalize them. When mining companies start making losses, they seem to privatize. But these are cycles. But the only thing I want to say is we have an example of a state-owned entity, mining company, Elixir. But where does Elixir, if you really go sit down and take away the emotion from it, forget about the history, what's happened to Elixir? Elixir is, with due respect, a lame duck. Because the inherent processes, the inherent decision-making, the factors, the surrounding issues make Elixir a lame duck, because it can't act speedily to adjust to this current situation, find itself. It can't. Government wants this, Elixir wants that. There's a million of other kind of interests, and at the present moment, it's going to falter, and more, it's faltering as a state-owned entity. So what I'm saying is, if the state-owned entity, mining company, wants to make sure that it's going to run effectively and wants to have a return to its shareholder, which is the state, it will have to focus on one thing, and that is having a return to the shareholder, whatever that is determined as. And if it's anything else, returning money to the shareholder is going to falter along the line, because we've seen in Bolivia, what the position is. We've seen what the position was in Chile. Chile, the CEO of that company, mining company, stood up and said, if we could, we would have privatized this business, or at least get private-owned companies to invest in this company. That's what they said. So we need to focus that particular mining company's objectives on the right things. Otherwise, it's going to falter like Alexco is doing at the moment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I know that the temptation is there for us to discuss extensively the matter of the state-owned mining, but fine, it's raised by the president, and indeed that's what we are dealing with. And I'm happy that the DA is not objecting to the establishment of the state-owned mining company, raising pertinent issues around modeling. I think we'll discuss that, you know, when the time comes. I think the state president has basically laid down the gauntlet on us that we do have mineral wealth in this country, which is the common heritage to everybody. I think our responsibility, therefore, is to see to it that this common heritage does indeed accrue benefits to all South Africans in one form or another. And what the department is raising is that there is a state-owned mining company as we speak. They are in the process of hiving it off the energy establishment so that it's a standalone entity. And I think you've alluded to the fact that we need to look at the model, therefore, of that state-owned mining company. Because this central question is posed by the president is basically having something to do with two issues in the main. One is the benefit that must accrue to South Africans, and secondly is the job creation. For instance, the DG is talking about the need for new mines to be established, and indeed this must be, you know, work that must be done by the state-owned mining company, of course in partnership with private sector or on its own. We must be ready to go down, you know, that direction at some point. And this wealth, mineral wealth, has been approved by, has been basically certified by a number of entities, including your Citibank. So we're not talking of something that is unknown. And also the levels of poverty and unemployment, underdevelopment in the country are known to us. So our responsibility is to basically answer the question that the President has raised, which I think in March, when the strategies are dealt with, we will then need to engage extensively. I like this sector mining strategy that you are referring to, that you give us details thereof. It seems that a lot of work has gone into that, and all we need is to be appraised so that we don't reinvent the wheel. We simply, you know, put our shoulders onto the wheel, and then the whole question of the beneficiation strategy. But before I sum up, let me allow you to react, the department, if you would want to some of the issues raised, and then we can then sum up.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I won't respond to what Honourable Sonto has said. I agree with it. You know, I think I'm the best qualified person to deal with this issue of whether this thing can work or not, because I'm a public servant. You know, and as a public servant, I'm not actuated by ideology in my responses. And the honorable members, you know, are politicians, and at times their positions, the positions that they take, are also colored with their et cetera, et cetera. I didn't see it, honorable member. I don't know. Is it there? Yeah, it's there. But it's quiet. It's quiet. So, but. Or a red herring. And now, the issue, the point that have been raised by Honorable Schmidt, you know, I would like us to be very cautious about our comparisons, because whatever mistakes that Alexco has committed are the mistakes that we are going to ensure that the state-owned mining company avoids. You see, because the we have not yet seen the business case of this state-owned mining company. And as long as we don't know the business case for the state-owned mining company, I think it would be premature of us to say that it will fail or it will succeed. I think let's wait until we see the business case and see whether the business case of Alexco, I mean of the state-owned mining company, will be the same as that of Alexco. Will they be going, perhaps, the reason why Alexco is not successful is the fact that it decided to go to the deep marine mining rather than whatever, or the commodity that it chose didn't lend itself to sustainability. You know, which are the pitfalls that the state-owned mining company must avoid going into the future. And number two, I agree with the fact that all these other companies, the state-owned enterprises, operate in a monopolistic or semi-monopolistic environment. But the Honorable Schmidt has forgotten only one company, which I had the privilege of creating, Petro SA. We created Petro SA out of, you know, the self group of entities. We then started to create it as a commercial entity.
entity. And at that point in time, we said that the business case of Petrol SA must be informed by the fact that it will be competing in a robust competitive environment, which is basically the petroleum sector in South Africa. And Petrol SA has been given no privileges as a state-owned mining company. It's lagging it out. They're like any other petroleum company in South Africa. So the long and short of it, Chairperson, is that I believe that what will determine the success or failure of a state-owned mining company is not the history of other state-owned mining companies, but is the business case, the specific business case of that particular company and the operations of that company, the selection of the commodities that that company is going to be dealing with, and the strategies that it will employ in order for it to work as a business in that particular environment. So with those words, Honorable Smith, I would like to say to you, don't be worried. All those concerns that you have, I believe are valid concerns, but I believe that they will be catered for in terms of the business case that will be developed for this company. And in terms of the strategy, operational strategies that will be put in place for this company, look at Vale, the Brazilian company. You know, that company now is the third largest mining company in the world. And it evolved as a state-owned mining company. What?
You said
it's the seventh largest. Yes. You see? So, but the crux of the matter is that it is large. You see, that it's humongous, you know. So, and it evolved as a state-owned mining company. What will stop SOMCO from being another Vale? Nothing. It depends on how that company gets operated going forward. So that's why I think what we need to do before we pass judgment, let's hear the other side. Let's in the form of this business case for this company. And if this company comes to the honorable members with a bad business case, please skin them alive. Because it will not be in the best interest of this country for a company to come being owned by the people of South Africa with a business case which is bound to fail. But before that happens, I think we must give let's say, I know that not all of us go to church and therefore have faith, believe in faith and hope and all that thing that will see the kingdom of God when you go to the other side. But even in real life, it is like that indeed. But okay, let me stop. I'm beginning to what you call other people now. Please don't respond, Honorable Member, who's in front of me.
Okay. Thank you very much, DJ. I think honorable members, you know, on a more serious note, that this is work in progress. I think before the end of the month of March, we would try and get the department back here to basically flesh out in more details issues that we're now discussing, including the quantification of the possible jobs that will be created. But I think in as far as the department itself, we see that they've given us in details their action plan in terms of the filling in of vacancies. And we know that by the end of June, so many positions that are funded would be created, would be filled, and that would result into so many jobs being created. And I must say that on this matter that we are discussing of the mineral wealth of the country, counterposing it to the levels of poverty and unemployment, this is not a matter that we need to play games around. We've been saying in many years, particularly since the start of the fourth parliament, that if we are not careful, we will be overtaken by events.
You are correct, Honorable Sondo. When we took this decision to go in this direction, there were quite serious views against the direction. But even back then, we said South Africa is a country which is politically volatile, in the sense that you have the populace of this country being highly political. You've got people that know that they are coming from the history of the struggle. They know what apartheid did to them and how did they struggle to overthrow it. And indeed, they overthrew it. So therefore, the likelihood of what happened in Egypt, in Tunisia, should not be discounted. Once people lose confidence in a particular system, they simply rise against it. So therefore, we need to be applying our minds very properly. We've raised this matter with the Chamber of Mines that we've heard, how opposed people are with the state intervening in this industry. But we have not heard what are the alternatives in terms of dealing with this situation of unemployment, with this situation of poverty. How best do they believe we can share the mineral wealth of this country? We have not heard that. So you can be so good in saying this is not right, this will not work, but if you're not putting any alternatives, across, then indeed you are leaving us in a situation where we must retain the status quo, which we know that is unsustainable. So I'm saying therefore that we will come back in March and indeed deal with this. We would try and set aside sufficient time when you are to appraise us on the strategies that you're talking about, and indeed when we begin to discuss the issue of the state-owned mining company, we will also set aside sufficient time and look at these different models and also business cases that you are referring to as the DG. But the fact of the matter is that we must succeed. There's no room for us to fail. Otherwise, we would be failing the people that have sent us here to work towards betterment of their lives. With those few words, I think we are done with this topic. Let us thank the department. It was too early. We knew even when we were putting out the invitation, but we knew that you would rise to the occasion, as you did, to give us a sense of which direction are you taking. So thank you very much, TG and your team. Honorable members, let's break for tea, 15 minutes. In that time, we can extend it by 5 minutes, and say 20 minutes, you reread this document, the annual report. When we come back, we're going to deal with it, and because we must adopt it today. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.